We'll root our way into the April 30, 2011 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, with this rain report. If you subscribe to CQVHF or CQ Magazine, you'll probably already be familiar with Joe Lynch and 6CL. Joe is the editor for CQVHF and VHF editor for CQ. Rains Hapali, KC9RP, spoke with Joe at the Digital Communications Conference in Chicago not long ago about Joe's ham radio beginnings.
When I was in fourth grade, my mother passed away, and my father was unable to continue to care for us and continue working at the same time, so he put us in a Catholic orphanage. At that orphanage, in the day room, I discovered a college textbook. I had no way of understanding what it meant as a fourth grader, but it had pictures in there, and I looked. The first picture I saw was of radio wave propagation, and I was fascinated by that, throwing the rock in the pond and watching the ripple effect, and that was being described as how propagation worked from a vertical antenna. And so that kind of got me hooked, interest in propagation, the propagation of radio waves. After my dad remarried, I started listening to the radio, listening to long-distance radio stations. And I noticed in my neighborhood there was a tall antenna. And I said, well, maybe this guy must have some way of communicating long distances. So I went over to his house, and I said, I would like to know what your antenna's for.
Now what grade were you in at that point?
At that point, I was in fifth grade.
Oh, a year later.
Sixth grade. I spent part of fourth grade and all of fifth grade at the orphanage, and then sixth grade, I was back home. At that point, I was exploring around the neighborhood, and this was Cliff Evans, K6BX, was the person whom I met, and he was my neighbor. I went over to his house. He took me out to his shack, and he said, now, here's all my ham radio, and it was all spread out on his desk, and he said, now, just keep your hands off. Leave it alone, and just look. Well, I didn't pay attention to that, and he turned his back, and I was turning every knob. And he turned around with fire in his eyes. He said, you don't come back here until you learn how to leave this radio alone. It took me 3 years to come back. In the meantime, got a new next-door neighbor, Earl Wiederholt, K6SMT, moved in. I saw his call sign on his truck, and I went over to him almost as soon as he moved in, and I said, my name is Joe Lynch, and I want to become a ham radio operator, after learning about it from Cliff. So he said, oh, good. So he got some military code records from the Navy and got a license manual and started helping me learn the Morse code and then quizzing me on the license manual. And finally, he decided I was ready to take my novice exam. In those days, novice exams were administered by a volunteer examiner. We're so sophisticated now in the volunteer examiner program, but it was the only way you got your novice license was by someone administering it to you. So he administered the exam, he sent it away, eventually got my license back about 6 weeks later, dated December 28, 1960. My call sign was WV6PDE in California and New Jersey. They were issuing novice call signs with the V in the call to indicate novice. That was when they ran out of call signs in the W's and the K sequences. WN and KN, those were predecessors for W6 and K6. But then when they ran out of W6 and K6, they went to WA6. But to kind of distinguish that, they went with WV in the 2 call sign area and the 6 call sign area. But eventually, they decided when the other call signs were running out, like 1, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, and 0, they started issuing WN call signs for novices, which then converted to WA, which led to some confusion down the road because there was WN something something, and then that call sign might be converted to WA 8 something, but there might be also a WN out there that would convert to a WB 8 call sign. So a little bit of a confusion, but they managed to get around it. And then there was still a little bit of residual calls of a W6 call that was a WN6 or so on. Anyway, I lasted 3 months as a novice. In spring break, I studied up for my general class exam, went down to the local FCC office, and passed the 13 word per minute code test and the theory, and walked out of that with the new weight of waiting for my general class license to come in the mail, which eventually it was, and I was on 40 and 80 meters AM for a number of years, and 15 meters was when I got a beam antenna from somebody who let me have one.
Now, what year was this?
1961 through 63 or 4, in that time frame.
What was your first rig as a novice?
My very first rig was home-built. A friend of mine, Frank Adams, WA-60AC, who is now, he eventually became A-6U, and is now a silent key, helped me. He was 1 year ahead of me in high school, and he helped me build my first rig using surplus tubes and 6L6 in it, and so we were on the air, and then there was another ham in the neighborhood who loaned me a radio that he got from Army Mars, and that was how I got on the air.
What was that receiver, do you know?
Oh, I don't remember now. It was just a big old receiver, general coverage receiver, and I don't remember.
And what did you use for an antenna?
Usually a wire antennas. At one time I had a folded dipole for 80 meters that strung across the lot without a ham radio operator. His last name was Bible and his call sign was WA6BDW. He loaned me that antenna, but then eventually he wanted it back, so he took it down and I had to put up a wire dipole antenna. So most of the time was wire dipoles for 80 and 40 meters, and then the three-element beam for 15 meters.
You're listening to a conversation with CQ VHF editor and CQ Magazine VHF editor Joe Lynch, N6CL, and Rains Hap Holly, KC9RP. Hap will conclude his conversation with Joe in a moment. This is the Rain Report, scheduled to occupy booth 329 at the Dayton Hamvention, May 20, 21, and 22 in the Hera Arena, Trotwood, Ohio. This is the Radio Amateur Information Network.
At what point did you get into VHF, UHF?
Well, that came much later. In the 1980s, I had kind of tired of HF and heard people talking about working long distance on 6 meters and 2 meters on various exotic propagation modes like meteor scatter or tropo or sporadic E on 2 meters. And that got me interested, so I bought a Kenwood TR-751 multimode radio and used that to get involved in VHF. And that was in the late 80s. Started making meteor scatter contacts and getting hooked up with the people who are doing that. And that's what I've been doing ever since.
When did you get into writing? And did ham radio have anything to do with your writing career?
That goes back to high school. I was the editor of the SOBARS Bulletin, South Bay Amateur Radio Society, which is in Chula Vista, California. And that came about by my association. I have to go back to Cliff Evans because after I got my ham radio license, I went back over to his house, out to his shack in the backyard. When I went to the door, I said, "I'm back," and I held up my novice license, and I do have a ham radio license. So he said, "Okay, I'll let you come in." But again, you don't touch anything, so I sat on my hands the entire time I was in his shack. He began to trust that I knew how to behave. And he had the USA, the Connie Handers Club at that time, and he published a newsletter for that and had me collate it for him. He paid me 50 cents an hour to collate it and 75 cents an hour to mow the yard and pull weeds and things like that. So I actually preferred to get the 50 cents per hour because it was less backbreaking than what he required out there. So the smell of the ink and the old Gessner, the film that you would type on and run through the mimeograph machine, that's how we produced a copy in those days. So I learned about that. He taught me about that and I said, you know, I'd like to become more involved in that, and so I proposed to the South Bay Amateur Radio Society that I'd start a newsletter for them and I'd be their editor, and they said, well, why not?
You were in high school.
16 years old, yes.
Yeah.
So I did this for a couple of years for them. When I graduated from high school, then nobody else wanted to do it anymore, and so it kind of went away. So that kind of stayed in the background there. 1976, I was very interested in a paper I read on the Mondura Minimum, a period of 70 years where there's virtually no sunspot activity. It was written by a man by the name of John Eddy, who was out of Colorado and worked at the University of Colorado, and I think it was at Boulder. I read that and I said, this is fascinating. So I contacted QST to say, are you interested in a digest of this article? And they said, yes. So I wrote a digest for it, edited by W1HDQ. Ed Tilton was the VHF editor at one point for QST. The article was published in July 1976 QST. That was my first publishing in a national publication. And then in the following, in February, I wrote another article, which was basically a summary of four different theories of the new cycle of propagation. I think it was cycle 21 at that time. That was appeared with an article written by Bob Rose, who was an employee at Naval Ocean System Center in San Diego. We were both working out there, and he had developed a particular theory about propagation in the forthcoming cycle. They're all worried about propagation and sunspot activity because Skylab was up there, and the increased sunspot activity in the aurora and all of that would be degrading the Skylab, and they wanted to know if they could be able to predict it's falling to Earth, the sky is falling kind of thing. That was my first foray into the national magazine publishing, and so with that, I showed that to a fellow that moved in near me. His name was Leo Sands, and near where I lived, and he was the editor at that time of CB magazine. So in reading over my material, he said, "How would you like to write for me?" So I said, "Sure." I wrote a monthly column for that in CB magazine, and then eventually the owner of that magazine sold it to somebody else. Somehow or another, I don't remember how it was that Gordon West, a WB6NOA, was involved, but he had oversight in the magazine at that point. And I had submitted an article that Leo had asked me to write, only to have Gordo reject it. So I have this notoriety of now having one of my columnists once reject something that I wrote.
What years are we talking about?
The CB craze pretty much fizzled in 1980, so it would be late 1970s to early 1980. So by the time that was over with, I was in real estate at that time. Later I went to work for the FAA as a contract instructor, and then this opportunity came up for me to write for CQ magazine. I've been doing that ever since. But when I became section manager for Oklahoma in 1986, I was section manager from 88 to 96. For those years, I had to write a monthly report, which appeared in section manager in the back of QST of section manager news. And so that kept my writing up. And then I saw from an ARRL bulletin that CQ magazine had lost their 3HF editor and that they were looking for somebody to write a bimonthly column. So I contacted Gail K2RED and said, "I'm interested in doing that." And she said, "Send me a sample column." She talked it over with Al Dorhofer, the editor of the magazine, and they hired me. And that was back in 1991. I wrote my first column for CQ magazine in 1991.
Did you take any writing courses?
Actually, I did take a writing course in newspaper article writing at San Diego State, but I did not pass the course. I think I got a D in the course. It's like Einstein failing math. I just kind of learned how to write and learned what looked good. And with regard to CQ VHF magazine, I was asked to start editing that magazine in 2001.
This has been a conversation between CQ Magazine VHF editor and CQ VHF editor Joe Lynch and 6CL and Rains Hapali, KC9RP. Partly personal, some of you may be wondering what happened to part two of our sneak peek at the Dayton Hamvention with its assistant chair, Josh Long. We realized last minute that there were a couple of additional pieces of information that we needed from Josh, so we'll conclude Hap's conversation with Josh next week. Don't worry, you can still hear part one from last week. All RAN reports dating back to June 2006 are still posted on our archive page at theranreport.com. The RAN report is copyright 1990-2011. RAN, all rights reserved. Now, for everyone connected with RAN, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at RAN, the Radio Amateur Information Network. www.therainreport.com.